97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Hey, welcome back. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. And 2 days ago, we had the shooting in Manhattan. And we're still learning more about that. And also the fallout from comments of people who are running for mayor. And to talk about all that, Bobby Chacon, retired FBI special agent. Bobby, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Let's start with the murderer who traveled from Nevada to New York City. Can you tell us about the weapon that this individual used in these killings?
Yeah, it would look like an AR-style assault rifle. I mean, I tend not to use that term, but that's the term that's being reported as. It's your standard M4, I think, which is, you know, kind of a military issue. When I was in Iraq, the FBI issued us M4s. They're the kind of law enforcement version of an M16. And so I'm not quite sure if this was a run-of-the-mill AR-15 or it was closer to an M4. It seems like he might have had a kit to build it, or parts of it. These things are often assembled different ways and modified by people individually to their own specs in some cases, in a lot of cases. And so they have actually identified the guy that either purchased this weapon for him or with him, or may have helped him kind of modify it to his own specifications.
Hey, Bobby, you know, we see that that camera picture of him walking casually down the street in Manhattan holding that gun. I mean, are you surprised that someone was able to just walk in? I mean, get the distance he did just holding that gun on his side?
No, not really. I mean, I'm a native New Yorker. My dad and brother were both NYPD. You know, at that hour of the night, New York is a very interesting place in that there's a lot of hustle and bustle. You know, a photograph is also just a really quick snapshot of something. He probably moved across that plaza very quickly. And it's you know, if people are getting off work in Manhattan, and this was a time when people are kind of getting off work and either meeting people after work or going home, they get their heads down. They're very seasoned commuters. They do the same commute every day. And you know, they just focus on getting home. You know, and oftentimes, too, you see something like that, and there's kind of a delay. You know, you're in shock, and you're like, am I seeing what I'm seeing? Is that a prop? Is that a toy? You know, what is that? And so there's that kind of initial delay, and that's all it takes for a gunman hell-bent on murdering people, is that slight delay for people to go, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing, what my brain is telling me I'm seeing? So I think if you combine all of those factors together, it doesn't surprise me that he was able to double park, quickly walk across that plaza, get in that lobby, and then you just start shooting. I mean, unfortunately, Manhattan is a very dense city. There's people everywhere. You don't have to go very far or shoot in any single direction, and you're going to hit a lot of people.
So now we're talking about, getting the evidence. You've got people in Nevada, you've got in New York. What does an investigation that goes across state lines, what does this look like? You know, I mean, the murderer, I mean, he's dead. So what are the steps that are being taken now as we speak?
So I think that there's a couple of avenues being pursued. So, there's the physical evidence. So I think they want to, number one, recreate his route. They want to go to Nevada where they know he was last seen before he started this quote unquote trip to New York. And so they have little bits and pieces along the way. And that's through license plate readers and toll booth readers, things like that. So they're going to piece that together and then try to fill in the dots in between the pieces that they know. And so you get a larger, more accurate picture of this trip that he was on. Did he stop anywhere? Did he, associate with anybody along the way or whatever? And so that's what they're doing now. They're like almost physically recreating that trip. That's one avenue that they're also doing the standard background investigations, talking to his family, his friends, his coworkers, any acquaintances that he had there. That's another avenue. The third is they're looking at his online presence, his digital footprint, as they say nowadays. So they're looking at who he associated with online, what his search history was, what he was looking up on his computer, and those type of things. So all of these things are going on simultaneously to really determine motive, because we know what he did and how he did it. So those are not kind of mysteries anymore, as they are usually in a case. This, you know, the only real mystery remaining is why. And so they have his note that was found next to his body that kind of indicates a few whys. They don't make complete sense given his history and what we know about him so far. His anger at the NFL is a little misplaced, it seems, because he obviously never played in the NFL. I'm not even sure he came close to playing in the NFL. So this thing about him having CTE, which is that concussion syndrome that a lot of NFL players come down with or came down with prior to, you know, the increased safety features that the NFL has acquired through better helmets and different rules and things like that. So, you know, the whys, you know, and I'm not a why guy. I investigate a lot of homicides in the FBI, mostly gang and mafia related, which are federal crimes. The whys were not usually something we spent a whole lot of time on because they were not an element of the crime. You don't have to prove why somebody murdered somebody. You just have to prove that they did the murder. In most cases, you exempt things like hate crimes and things like that. But for the most part, most homicide statutes don't have a why requirement. It's not an element of the crime. But you do want to know that because, you know, are similar people situated who might carry out similar attacks and things like that. So there's always a desire to know, but we never had to use that in court. We never had to get evidence of the why. But, you know, because in cases like this, where he, you know, now they're reporting he has a history of mental illness or mental issues, the why is usually an irrational reason anyway. So even if you do find it out, it usually doesn't make sense to us rational thinking human beings.
Bobby, you know, obviously this is happening as there is a mayoral election, and I mean, police have come up in this election. Let's play clip 13. You've got a guy running for mayor who's said things along the lines of this.
When we talk about defund the NYPD, the entirety of the push is defund the NYPD and refund all of these different social services and things that actually create safety.
When you see something like this happen and you have a guy running for mayor who just a year ago was saying stuff like that, I mean, how dangerous is that idea in a place like New York City?
It's hugely dangerous, Joe. I mean, if I still lived in New York, which I did most of my life, I'd be frightened to death of candidates like this who get in office. And what are you going to do in a situation like this? You're going to have a team of mental health professionals respond to this guy carrying an M4 around, shooting people, and what are they going to do, talk him out of it? It's ridiculous. Now, there are arguments for teams like that, but they work in conjunction. And I know, like, Kings County up in Washington, at Seattle, has things like that. There are departments that are pushing the envelope with that kind of stuff. But they are an adjunct. They're a supplement to the police department. They're not in place of and never will be in place of the police department, because there are people with mental health issues that don't want to be addressed and are hell-bent on causing violence no matter what you do. And the only one standing between them and the violence they're going to inflict on innocent civilians is uniformed police officers. And that's going to be the case. And you're not ever going to kind of work your way out of that with policies. These paradigms that they're coming up with mental health teams responding instead of police are a recipe for getting more of your civilians, more of your citizens killed and injured.
Yeah, I'm talking to you from Buffalo, New York, where the pro-police Democrat mayor just lost a primary to the defund the police New York senator. And it's scary times. It's scary that there are people out there that actually think that's the way to go.
Yeah, it's absolutely astounding to me. And, you know, on one hand, I'm like, you know, have at it. You know, you'll reap what you sow, and you'll come running back to, you know, wanting the police there first thing as soon as you call them. And maybe you need to be, you know, taught a lesson by yourself. If that's what you want, then live under those conditions and see how that works out for you. It's not, I'm telling you, you know, my father was a police officer in New York City in the 50s, 60s, 70s. My brother was in the 80s and 90s. I was an FBI agent in New York City in the 80s and 90s. It's not going to work that way. These people that are hell-bent on violence are not going to respond to a mental health professional team showing up. Now, is there a place for them? Yes. But it's certainly not what these people, what these politicians now are trying to push. It will not work. The one thing it will accomplish is getting more innocent civilians killed and injured.
Yeah. Hey, Bobby, really appreciate you joining us. Good stuff, man.
Anytime, Joe. Thanks for having me.